Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
All right, now we're going to spend a few minutes. We're going to spend a few minutes at the end of the show talking about Earth's shifting magnetic fields. Point of fact, the Earth's north magnetic pole has been slinking away from Canada toward Siberia. What does it mean? Hopefully, we will have a better understanding. It's a little complex, but we've asked the right person to join us, so I'm looking forward to that. First, regardless of your convictions about the causes of global climate change, more of us than ever are concerned about its effects. Natural disasters, extreme weather, they're generating more worry for us than they have in the past. Is this a case of you have to see it to accept it? And with more of us recognizing the shifts in our climate, you would think that we're all springing into action, but actually we're not. There's a huge gap between awareness and response. Here with me to talk about this is Waleed Abdulati. He's the former chief scientist at NASA and professor of geography at the University of Colorado. Welcome, Waleed.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And Heidi Roop, lead scientist for science communication at the University of Washington. Thank you for joining me, Heidi.
Good morning.
And of course, we need you in this conversation. What are you doing to help mitigate the climate crisis? Or have you found it hard to make the leap between your intellectual recognition of climate change and the practical steps you can take? Call me 800-242-2828 or 651-227-6000. And of course, I'm on Twitter at Tiffany Hansen with two S's, E-N. So, Waleed, I'd like to get something out of the way right off the top. I'm not someone who thinks that you can believe, in quotes, in science. Facts are facts. And I'm hoping that that's what we're going to stick with today.
Yes, that's certainly the case. I think it's you go where the facts lead you, and it's kind of a degree of accepting something versus belief.
Believing
implies you're taking it on faith, and it's really where you end up after rigorous analysis that we're talking about here.
So you know that we are currently in the middle of this really mind-blowingly cold snap, polar vortex right now in our region. The notion that because it's cold, we don't have global climate change is actually one that is fairly prevalent on social media, including our president. That seems a little bonkers. In that what we're talking about here is a phrase, I guess, that I use. I can't remember where I heard it now, but we're talking about global weirding in that, right?
That
what's happening isn't just going to make everybody hotter, right?
Well, the blessing and the curse of social media is that anybody can say anything. I liken climate when people talk about the stock market, they don't pick one stock and use that as an indicator of what the market is doing. We have the S&P 500, we have the Dow, and the same is true with climate. You can't look at one location at one point in time or over one time window and draw inferences about the entire climate. You have to look at the globe. You have to look at its progression over time. You have to look at the interaction of the elements. And taken collectively, it's pretty clear that the Earth has warmed, will continue to warm, and a lot of the mechanisms driving that are pretty well understood. So it's easy, it's tempting in some cases to point to what's immediate and in your face and think that's indicative of what's happening all over the world, but it simply isn't.
Heidi, I'd like to go to the phones here to Bruce in Northfield. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm all right. What would you like to add?
I was going to say, first of all, I have to address the word believe. I was a decision scientist, and I always taught my students to not use the word believe, but instead use the word actionable. So when the probabilities get in a certain way, then it's an actionable analysis, not a belief. Mm-hmm. So Admiral Tintley says the same thing. I just saw him speak at St. Olaf.
Nice.
By way of introduction, I'm chair of the Conservative Caucus in the Citizens Climate Lobby, and we spend a lot of time trying to understand and help our volunteers understand how language and framing can create pushback. And we like to say that when we overload our climate solutions with our respective tribal requirements, we often give the other side a toehold to fight back. So the example I would use would be when you start taking a simple solution like a carbon fee and start loading it with all kinds of other problems and fixes of other, you know, problems that may be related to but not directly, something like what the Paris Accord did when it tried to do a lot of recognizing the social injustice of who's suffering from all of this. And we say, look, when you start throwing bad information in, you're overloading the problem, and it makes it easier for the other side to find their tribal reason for not believing that you should use the solution.
Bruce, excellent point. Heidi, I'm going to throw that one to you, because language we use around this is something you're deeply involved with.
Yes. So these are important points. And I think the main state of play, and unfortunately, this is not a great response that people are going to want to hear. But when it comes to communicating about controversial topics like climate change, which is still a very much highly partisan issue in our country, as a result of these two new recent polls that have been released, and this is on trend with previous polls, is language matters, audience absolutely matters, and establishing values really matters. And we know that as individuals, our speaker here who called in is speaking about tribes and tribalism. These are most certainly part of our identities as individuals. We develop mental models of how the world works, and we see and observe climate as part of that, but often are not making the immediate connection because there are many things that are happening in society and in our daily lives that don't necessarily put climate at the fore. It's not necessarily the most important thing or the most pressing problem, right? Having a job, paying your bills, staying warm, staying cool in extreme heat, all of these things are more important, and maybe we're not using the same words to describe the same experiences. And so there is no one-size-fits-all scalable solution to connecting people to, say, climate action.
Is some of what we're up against the notion that people just don't want to be lectured to? We don't want to sound on this program like we're a bunch of know-it-alls telling everyone, this is what you have to do.
Absolutely. So I am a classically trained earth scientist. I have been taught to communicate within my expertise and with my peers and colleagues. And we have for many years used what we call the deficit model. That is, in essence, us talking at you, not with you. And when we look to the scholars who study how people learn and communications sciences, the science of science communication, for decades they have been saying the deficit model does not work. We need to find ways to build dialogue, to listen and learn collectively so that we can actually address these things that the caller just mentioned, like what are the shared values? How do we actually have effective conversations that compel people to act? That does not happen in lecture format.
What is the language that you use around climate change when you're talking to folks about it? Call me, 800-242-2828 or 651-227-6000. I'm on Twitter at Tiffany Hansen. Waleed, we now know that 72% of Americans say that global weirding, is a personally important problem. So it's not just a polar bear problem anymore. People are getting it up close and personal. Is that what is shifting the tide, or is there something else at play here?
Well, I think certainly when you experience something or you observe something that's consistent with what the science is telling us, you're more inclined to accept that. And in fact, I don't remember the specifics, but I believe there were polls conducted prior to Hurricane Florence and after Hurricane Florence in the Carolinas, and the acceptance of global climate change went way up. And I think when something you can actually experience and feel it, and it's not distant and removed geographically, or it's not the domain of scholars who want to talk about this on an intellectual level, or it's not framed in the context of aggressive activism, I think when it touches your life or you see something that's consistent with what you've been hearing, you're much more inclined to say, yeah, I think I see that now. And you know, in my own work, I studied the Arctic for 25 years, and just watching the ice melt in the way it has is something very visible, very tangible, but that's because I go to these places, I see it, and I feel it. It's different when you're in, the continental U.S., and you don't really see that much change or experience that much, or you get really cold like people are today. But when over time, and this is particularly the case with farmers, for example, when over time things are different, you know, the growing practices that you grew up with don't seem to work as well today, and you have to change your strategies. One is more inclined to say, you know, I think there's something going on. This isn't like it used to be.
Well, you still will occasionally hear folks say, hey, you guys have been talking about climate change for a long time and nothing's happened. And now, I guess what we're saying is something's happening that people can actually see and feel. It's not just an abstract concept that's maybe not necessarily hard for folks to understand, but there's just not a willingness to devote the time to understand it.
Well, that's part of it, and I also think when we talk about climate change, we're talking about processes and phenomena that evolve slowly over time. So you may have a year of drought in a location, or you may have more frequent drought or more frequent flooding, but it's kind of hard until you accumulate information over a period of 10 or 20 years or longer to look back and say, wow, this has really changed. So we tend as humans to react to things that are right in front of us, things that we can immediately see and recognize. But the reality is with climate change, it creeps up on us. And we can look today and compare it to 30 years ago and see those differences. But we don't have the everyday occurrence. And in part, this is why people rush in a lot of cases when there's a heat wave to say, oh, this is it, it's here. You're feeling it when there have always been heat waves. Or people rush when it's very cold to say, oh, you know, you're wrong. It's just not happening. Because we tend to react to what is immediately in front of us. When in fact, this is a slowly evolving process that takes systematic observation and attention.
Well, sure. I mean, around here, just last night, we're hearing statistics like, well, we haven't seen this cold weather since the late 1800s. And, you know, some folks can say, well, see, it had happened before, so it's not like anything has changed now. It's just the natural flow of the world. What I hear you saying is actually what we're experiencing is something that's built up over time.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, there's always going to be variability set against a backdrop. And as that backdrop warms or increases, that variability still will have highs and lows. And so what we pay attention to as scientists is what's happening in the background. And the very arguments, you know, people maybe, or statements people may be making in Minnesota right now are probably the direct opposite of what people are saying in Australia right now.
Right.
Which is experiencing tremendous heat anomalies, heat waves. And so one has to look at the whole, and one has to look at its evolution over time. And I'll come back to that stock market analogy. There are going to be crashes, and there are going to be, you know, sharp rises in individual stocks. But on the whole, and actually in the market as a whole, but on the whole, over time, things tend to be moving in a certain direction. And nobody looks at those data and those graphs and say, wait a minute, do you see this stock did this at this time, therefore the market is going to tank. We just don't do that. The same is true with weather and climate.
Heidi, I want to go to the phones again. Jason in Forest Lake is with us. Good morning, Jason.
Hi, good morning. You know, I remember seeing a program on Frontline a few years ago, and it talked about the changing debate over climate change. And back in the 90s, the conservatives, the Republicans, Bob Dole, Dave Durenberger, they were working on climate change. And then someone figured out that this would be a very good political wedge issue. Conservative talk show host Rush Limbaugh, et cetera, picked it up and turned it into a wedge issue. And the conservatives ever since have stayed, you know, stayed away from it. So that's my comment was, there was a point when conservatives were really looking at this seriously, and then they stopped for political reasons.
Before we went to our news break, we heard a call from Bruce. And he was talking about how here in the state and nationally, the Republicans, according to him, back in the 80s, were on the side of climate science and all on board. And that has changed. And there was a politicization, in his view, of the language around climate change. Do you agree?
Yes. So I'm not a political scientist. Expert. However, that is in fact the case. So we have seen a shift in the language being used by different parties. And we also, when we look at these polling results and we look at the American populace, we see that climate change is an issue that's still partisan. However, among those both in Democratic, Independent, and Republican parties, of those who believe that climate change is happening, again, here we come back to this belief word, which I'm not a fan of. But a majority of parties, they really do want to see action. And I think, you know, we can talk about all different ways that we should be having conversations about climate change, all the ways in which the issue is partisan. And that does become important when we think about policy solutions. However, we also see that 83% of those who think climate change is happening, they want the federal government to take steps to address it. 80% want their states to take steps to address it, and 76% would like to see their local governments or communities taking action. And so I see a clear opportunity for starting to shift the conversation from, is it a belief or is it happening? We see a large majority of adult Americans saying that climate change is happening. They say they're feeling it in their local weather, and that it's shifting their opinion. The science is more trusted than it has been in the past 5 years. And really what I think people aren't hearing, and I think is a barrier to action, are the numerous ways in which climate change touches our lives and the many ways in which we can act to adapt and prepare. So we've set change in motion. We have altered Earth's climate system. And the questions that we're presented with now are twofold. The first, what are we going to do to prevent the most negative consequences from coming to bear in the future? And we're talking a future in the mid-century. This is 2050, 2030. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change put out a special report on 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit for those of us in the U.S. What are the consequences of our planet warming that much? We have warmed global temperatures by 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit from 1901 to 2016. We've warmed the planet. The question now is, how much is it going to warm? And that is a direct consequence of our actions in terms of how much we as a global society choose to emit of greenhouse gases. So the second part of it is how we choose to prepare and adapt. And those are the important stories, because those are the places where people can see themselves in the solutions. These are things like, how is your water utility planning and preparing for a future with different water resources.
I want to get to a comment here on Twitter. George says there are individual actions. You can install solar, drive an electric vehicle, support climate change advocacy, reduce consumption. And then there are public actions. You can support carbon emission reduction policies and politicians that are behind these efforts. But Waleed, there is still, we're still battling that notion a little bit, at least on the individual level, that, you know, me driving an electric car isn't really going to change that much. You know, my little drop in the bucket isn't going to do anything. This is something we know all too well in public radio, right? Your donation matters. but it's a real phenomenon.
Yeah, I agree. And your donation matters, your vote matters in elections, your action matters in things like this. I think success in the face of a changing climate really is going to depend on attitude. And individual action is an expression of attitude. And when you add up the individual actions of millions and millions of people, you do make meaningful impacts. But it also has to happen on the federal and state fronts as well. It requires, yes, this is more than any one person can address, but the actions of individuals, when taken in the aggregate, are important, are significant. And, you know, when people speak up and people take action, it can be at the individual level, it can be at the corporate level, it can be at the government level. You know, Xcel Energy here in Colorado, which is actually based in Minneapolis, headquartered in Minneapolis, has made a commitment to produce zero carbon energy by 2050. You know, this is something where a company is sort of aggregating the contributions of a bunch of individuals by the steps it takes. But if you can imagine if everyone in the country drove an electric vehicle or a hybrid vehicle, what the implications for pollution and carbon emissions would be. It's hard to think, yes, I'm one person, what can I do? But boy, it's just if everybody starts thinking, oh, well, let me do my part, and let me have my neighbor do my part. I've seen this in my neighborhood. The first person to get solar panels on their roof precipitated questions by neighbors. Hey, why'd you do that? How much is it saving you? And you start to see more solar panels show up in your neighborhood. It's individual actions that precipitate a larger scale change in mindset, and it's the collective contributions that make the difference.
So, Heidi, in some ways, all climate is local, right? I mean, we do know that we have a pretty fair number of cities and counties that have committed already to reducing greenhouse gases. That's doing something on a smaller level. We know that when it comes to the carbon tax, for example, you know, almost 70% of people are okay using those funds to restore wetlands, forests, things like that. So what's happening in my backyard? They don't want to see it, you know, squandered, in their opinion, somewhere else. So is it that folks have to see it and feel it in order to do something about it? And does that actually then just make it really, truly a local issue?
So it is global climate change. So no matter how you slice it, we have a global Earth climate system that is changing the way we experience our daily lives locally. So it is both of those, just like small actions being needed as much as we need action on large governmental and global societal scales. And those actions are really important, right? People want to make contributions that are going to affect their daily lives, right? It's a lot easier to see yourself making an investment in your future, in the place you live and call home, or where you're connected to family. That's unsurprising to me, that people want to see, say, any sort of fee or tax contribute back to improving the quality of their life in some way, or the quality of the environment in which they live. And you know, I think taking the conversation beyond our emissions, which are a huge part of the climate solution, is starting to ask your city council members, what are you doing to prepare our community for a different future? Do we have enough clean air shelters and places to go when there's extreme heat events. These are important things. Can our community thrive when conditions are different, whether those are extremes or day-to-day changes? And we see foresters, farmers, utilities, natural resource managers all looking at the climate change information, trying to get information that they can use and apply in their work to ensure that they're making plans so that we as communities can thrive in the future. I live in the Pacific Northwest at the moment. I grew up in Wisconsin. There are stories of action and adaptation and people taking a critical look at what the future of climate will look like in the near and long term, and they're making smart, science-informed investments. Do we need more of that? Absolutely. But people want to see that happening in their own backyards, and one way you can catalyze that action is by asking people who are responsible for making those decisions on behalf of your community, your commissioner of public lands, your city council, your mayor, your governor, your elected officials. All of these are people who are making decisions and shaping the future of our communities. And if we want this to become an issue and we want our communities to be prepared, I certainly do. I would love to be able to know that people in my community, when there are hazardous air quality days due to increased wildfire, we experienced that this summer here in many parts of the western U.S., that those who are most vulnerable with asthma and heart conditions have somewhere to go that's safe.
So
I want to see that.
So Waleed, Dylan in Duluth called to say that community is important for sustainability. There's need for more connections between people to create the change we want to see. He's talking about local level on, I assume. On a national level, we saw this week that Dan Coats, the director of national intelligence, contradicted our own president in his testimony to the Senate Intelligence Committee. And I have a quote here. I want to read to you this real quick. We've only got a few minutes left here. The impact of long-term trends toward a warming climate, more air pollution, biodiversity loss, water scarcity are likely to fuel economic and social discontent and possibly upheaval through 2018. He's not talking about 2050.
No, and I will say the intelligence community, the military, are among the communities, generally conservative by nature, that are paying some of the closest attention to changing climate because it directly impacts their mission. And they are seeing or acknowledging the effects of climate change and the implications it has. Now, that particular statement talks about the potential for introducing social unrest, economic impact, which ultimately affects our strategic interests. It doesn't speak to anything concrete directly. Now, there may be more in the report or in classified aspects of it, but the point is, climate affects people and how we live. And when your mission is the safety of this nation, you consider all threats and you take them very seriously. The first caller referred to David Titley when he spoke. And Dave was an admiral in the U.S. Navy dealing with issues in the Arctic. And as the Arctic changed so dramatically, it was the Navy admirals, you know, that that said, holy cow, there's something going on here. So I think this again gets back to what is most important to you? What is your mission? How does climate affect that? And, you know, these entities, generally, again, conservative by nature, know something's happening and know that it matters.
Waleed Abdulati, thank you so much for your perspective on this. Former chief scientist at NASA and professor of geography at the University of Colorado. And Heidi Rupp, thank you as well. Lead scientist for science communication at the University of Washington. Great conversation about climate change.
Thank you.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.